morning. Today is Friday the 13th. Joining us this morning is Fire Chief Jim Robertson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You superstitious. Wink, wink, nod, nod, huh?
True.
I thought the fire service was one of those that was pretty routine-oriented. And
we're all very traditional.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I am.
But walking underneath a ladder would kind of be a career-defining move,
if
huh?
If that's your definition of superstitious, then
well, for some folks.
Then yes, I'm superstitious.
Yeah, that's more of a safety issue.
Yeah, that's how I think about it.
The cat thing's a little different, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. You ready for our Why Do We Say That?
Yes.
Lavender. Why was the flower known as lavender given that name?
I have no idea.
Yeah, okay, neither did I.
Is this called the humbling session?
Yeah,
is that
part
of how we start this?
Yeah. Seems to be. Most mornings, yes. Lavender. It was once a custom, now no longer allowed, for laundresses to place a sprig of this plant in with the laundry when they cleaned it in order to scent it. The word is Italian for washing.
Oh, yeah.
Lavender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That one kind of makes sense, huh?
It does.
Yeah. You know Italian?
A couple of words.
Oh, okay.
I know a couple of words of Spanish. I went to on a family trip to Italy 2 years ago.
Ooh.
So I used one of those language apps. But
did it work?
Well, I learned a few things.
You didn't get in too much trouble?
No. A lot of places there now, everybody speaks English. And as you can imagine, where we were, it was more touristy. But the most interesting, I guess, story relating to your question is the one amazing thing I saw was in this little hilltop village. The Italian shop owner using his phone to communicate with a Japanese tourist who was trying to communicate with him in Italian, but they were then talking to each other in English. it was pretty wild.
Just kind of stood back there and listened, huh, for a little bit?
Yeah.
Did they get it done?
I think so.
Eventually they got it done, yeah. And he ended up with spaghetti?
I think so, yeah. Spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh, well, I would think issues of communication are something you guys really stress an awful lot. Just responding to a call.
Yeah.
What word do you use? How's it defined? How's it, the application?
Right.
All those types of things. Do you drill on lexicon and communication and things of that nature? Because if I say the big fire.
Right.
Okay, well, big for you probably has got a different context than what it would for me if we were just talking, say, hey, that big fire at Donna. And it was only one person and two fire extinguishers
right.
Took it out.
We have policy that defines certain levels and that provides, a lexicon, to use your word. And then just through our training. And then the incidents, those change things too. And a lot of newer firefighters will learn on the job, so to speak, especially with the medical side of
Critical, certainly.
Yeah, and then you just become, like anything else, more definitive and succinct to describe things because we're the first responders. We're not the transporting agency, so we usually have to do a pass off to the paramedics or the EMTs are transporting. So we have to convey that information quickly. And then we're talking on the radio, so we give a report. If we need more resources, it has to be succinct. So that's a definite element of all of that.
Because there's not consolidated dispatch at this point.
Right.
Does that add another layer, or does everybody pretty much speak the same language?
It's pretty much the same language, especially in California. We have FireScope that kind of defined a common level of communication, interoperability, and resources. So when we had 9/11 and communication was a big issue, and then there were several federal requirements with communication, California was pretty far ahead of that. And that came more out of the whole wildland situation where, you know, every year we have this massive mutual aid system.
Multiple locals, multiple regionals, state, feds, everybody there.
So everybody kind of knows what the deal is. You all have radios that are compatible. You speak more or less the same language.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief Sean Robertson. Sean, with the communication, you guys do a fair amount of joint training, right, where you have departments combined. I would think that a lot of it is to learn the protocols, learn the processes, but also learn the language that everybody else is using. So in the heat of the moment, everybody knows what is being conveyed.
Yeah, exactly. A good example is interactions between fire and police or fire and law enforcement. We've been training a lot more in the last few years with active shooter, what we call a critical mass casualty incident. And it's not just learning.
Just kind of slipping back into that government speak, huh?
Well,
shooter, everybody understands,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Well, I guess it came out of the fact that other weapons of mass destruction have been used, for example, the vehicles.
Right, the trucks driving down the sidewalks,
bombs,
and that stuff.
You know, things like that. But it's not just learning the language, like you're saying, but also the different roles. We were talking earlier about Firescope and post 9/11, where there was this push to create a national incident management system, whereas in California we're used to the incident command system, again from wildland fires, have been doing it for decades, but we're used to that. We're used to operating as a team. When we're integrated into with law enforcement, they're a single resource. They respond, they interact or react to the situation. They don't necessarily have to wait and form up and fall into that chain of command or that hierarchy.
Yeah, they're more seamless.
Yeah, so that's a big change for law enforcement to adapt to. But to make the system or the incident work or be managed better based on case history, they have to really adapt that behavior. And we have to get more comfortable with what their roles are and what their focus is. So That's a big benefit of that interoperability.
Is everybody on that team now, or are there still some that you don't get much of a chance to either interact with or talk with? I would think like some of the federal entities.
Yeah, we do interact with them more on wildland incidents because it's within their jurisdiction. The same with local tribal entities just over in Hupar or even into Blue Lake and all those areas where we're interacting with them more than you might think.
Well, and again, it would make sense because, you know, if you're responding to a mutual aid situation, you know, everybody's coming in.
Yeah.
How do you determine who the incident commander is? First on site is it jurisdictional?
It's either jurisdictional or it's bound by government code. An example of that is, if it's on a roadway or in a waterway, it's going to be law enforcement, even if it's in fire jurisdiction, or it's going to be a waterway would be Coast Guard, for example. So they're identified as the incident commander, but generally on roadways, even, you know, 4th and 5th Street through Eureka, well, technically that's CHP's because it's a California state highway. Obviously, we're going to be there way before CHP. And then because it's within Eureka Police Department's jurisdiction, they're going to respond and they're going to be the ultimate authority. But generally speaking, fire will start the incident, and it also depends on what type of incident it is.
That's what I was saying. If you had some of these pill trailers, you know, they kind of look like a pill.
Yeah.
You know, there's something inside because you got all the emergency signage on the outside.
Yeah. So hazmat gets pretty specific. And with hazmat, if it's a significant incident, we're going to create what's called a unified command. Because so many entities and agencies are affected, the better system is to make those decisions together. And so that, you know, there's no real conflict at that level as to priorities. And then, you know, what it comes down to ultimately, right, is who's going to pay for it. Especially on a hazmat, who's going to pay for the mitigation and then the cleanup? The cleanup is always the more expensive part.
Interesting. I wouldn't have gone there. I would have gone, you know, who's the guy that knows what is going on? Okay, they're the lead.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And everybody else just is told what to do.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably recognize that through large-scale, very visible law enforcement incidents where...
You mean like a spilled can of paint on the road?
No, I don't mean like that. But that can...
I still have a, I mean, I know that it is, but I have a tough time thinking that's a hazardous material spill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But, you know, the classic Die Hard movie or whatever you want to think of where the FBI shows up and this is our incident now, you guys get out of here. And,
right.
You know, there's that jurisdictional control issue as well.
Yeah, the one I've heard probably most regularly because of the earthquakes is FEMA. Yeah, and do they add to, do they take over, do they ignore? You know, but honestly, most of it is on the funding side at the back end of it. You know,
yeah.
Who's going to make things right?
And part of incident management isn't just the initial mitigation, it's the recovery afterwards. So that's why we're thinking about the money because, I mean, if your house burns down, if you got out and got your valuables, your immediate concern is dealt with. But it's the months and years after that of getting you back to a stable place that is going to be your secondary and then most important priority.
It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, and along with Murphy's Markets. Sean, when you're looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, the financing or the dollars after the event, we never see it. There's no fancy uniforms running around. There's no adrenaline rush. There's no lights and sirens and excite. It just, okay. It's kind of like mop up. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'll help clean up.
Yeah.
Instead of putting the fire out.
Right. It's not glamorous.
No. And you probably have an adrenaline drain at that point rather than anything else, and everybody's kind of tired. What happens after a fire?
Well, generally, there's a few obligations we have. If we have to investigate it, we have to retain the scene and complete that process. And then if there's no need for that, but there's no homeowner, we generally secure the property so that nobody can loot it or there's no theft or a burglar or anything like that. So that's a basic obligation. The other part is, do the people who live there have another place to go.
Yeah, the relocation.
Yeah, part. So we'll see if they have family or friends. We are able to utilize the Red Cross, who can provide accommodation and basic some cost of living vouchers.
We also, the insurance companies move pretty quick on that stuff too, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, and so it again, it depends. Do they have insurance or not? Are they renters? Do they know their landlord? Is their landlord able to help them out? We're just trying to get them a place to stay quickly and to see if we can get more of their belongings, if there's anything they need us to help them with. Pets,
so pretty routine like for you guys.
Yeah,
in that scenario.
It's really important because we want that person to, you know, have the ability to move forward quickly. So if we can help mitigate the damage, if we can help contact the insurance agent, and then we're usually there's days of follow-up after that.
That's what I was wondering. Do you guys assign one of the firemen to follow up and kind of be the contact point, or is that something that it really isn't?
It's twofold. If we're investigating, and then it becomes an insurance investigation as well, our investigators will become a point of contact often to get more information from the homeowner and do follow up that way, or communicate with the insurance agents and their investigator. So we often cooperate with them that way to get it resolved quickly. If it's not an insurance issue, then one of the chiefs is going to do the follow-up. That's part of our duty as well.
Part of being in chiefdom?
Yes.
Yes,
so
okay.
The battalion chiefs, as the shift commander, so to speak, they're going to be the first point of contact. But, you know, if they go off on off their shift, then myself or their fire marshal will take care of that.
Backfill in. Yeah. Now, what if it's a hazardous material event? So it's not quite as routine.
Right.
We heard, what was it? I think it was in, I won't even have my mind so scattered. Outside of Eureka, they found a guy that was doing the good old-fashioned hash lab, you know, with the oils and stuff.
Yeah.
And butane and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Okay, BHO labs.
Yeah. Different dynamic, probably. Yes. A little bit more common. That's probably one of the more common ones that you guys have dealt with. But let's say it's something like that where there's, it may not be a criminal issue, but there was a spill of something.
Yeah, then we fall back to state and federal mandates, which basically say the local, what's called CUPA, and I probably can't remember the acronym right now, but they're the agency responsible for the investigation and the enforcement of essentially the EPA standards or what's safe. So they're the ultimate authority in determining if that incident is mitigated sufficiently and if we or other people are able to reoccupy that space. So essentially they determine if it's clean or not.
So on a scale from all the way up to you got to dig out all the dirt.
Exactly.
They're the players that are in there making that determination? Yep.
They have the authority to do that that enforcement, and we don't. We are just there to mitigate the emergency, and then we work with them as partners to get that done. That's why that incident command system is so critical to identify who the other players are and activate them early, because they're going to provide direction. They're going to get us on the pathway to recovery as quickly as possible.
Do they tend to come down as the heavy hand of law, or will they tend to work with either the other enforcement entities and the property owner?
What I've seen is they're generally wanting to work with all the agencies and the property owners. While their mandate is to ensure it meets a clean level, so to speak, they're also wanting to take care of the agencies and get the property owner back to where they want to be. Where it gets to the heavy hand is if the property owner tries to push off the problem, as you know, the classic is, well, it's on the sidewalk, it's not my problem, it's the city's, even though I dumped it there. It's, you know, that's the classic example.
So attitude enters into the equation.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you, like anything else, if you don't recognize or take some responsibility, then, you know, we will go to the letter of the law and go with it that way.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Sean Robertson. Sean, this time of the year, obviously Christmas, Christmas lights, Christmas trees.
Yes. Yes.
Big concerns are what?
Generally, if you have an untreated tree that you've bought from somewhere, or if you've gone and cut a tree out of the forest.
Which, or a live one.
Or you have a live one. You just want to take some general precautions so that it doesn't become a combustible fire hazard in your house.
Well, it is wood.
It is.
So by definition, it's going to, well, unless it's plastic.
But you don't want it to be a hazard. That's the key part.
Keep it watered?
Keep it watered. If it's bought from a lot, then it usually, it's supposed to have some treatment to it with a state fire marshal tag on it. If it's live, obviously you want to take care of it so it stays. You can use it next year.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to treat those.
Yeah. And then the other, you know, common sense things, don't put candles right near it. Don't put it too close to your fireplace if you have one. If you are going to use Christmas tree lights, make sure that, you know, there's no frayed cords, that the outlet's not smoking or blackened or...
Yeah, the daisy chain thing.
I think something don't that, overwhelm it.
Yeah.
Don't do that Clark Griswold and blow up the house.
The lights that you can buy today, can they do anything? I mean, they don't get warm.
Yeah, I think the lights we have nowadays are much safer. They have much lower voltage. They're much less fragile. And so a lot of the issues we had seen before, we don't see anymore. It's more
the antique ones or the ones that had the screw-in bolts?
Yeah, yeah. Everything's LED and integrated. And the bad part is it's all throwaway too. But, you know, they do last longer than they did before, I'll say that.
Yeah. I can't tell you the last time I saw it with the screw-in lights.
Yeah.
But that's what we all grew up with.
I
wonder if it would look underwhelming now. Because you're used to having so many lights and flashing this and doing that.
Yeah.
Or if it would be nostalgic. I suppose the real old ones, the candle holders on the trees, you guys probably have a little concern about those. Not a fan. Yeah, that's like talking about the Dodgers to a lot of Giant fans. I'm not really a fan of the Dodgers. Yeah.
Not a fan of open flames on Christmas trees. Yeah.
Yeah. What about after Christmas? Still have those same concerns until like mid-January?
Yep. Just thanks for the leading question. Just getting those trees, if they're live, obviously you want to put them back where they came from unless they stay inside. But as the trees start to die off and become drier, then you want to get them taken care of. And there are lots of operations through the local Recology. The Boy Scouts do a program where they'll come and pick up your tree for free. You just don't want to leave it inside where it can just degrade into that really flammable hazard.
And the cat sets up house inside of it, and you know, now you got displaced cats, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, yeah, bats and rats.
Yeah. No unicorns, though. Right? We listen to the song. No unicorns.
No unicorns.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks for coming by. Merry Christmas, bud.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow morning.